All right, welcome back to Bible Class Debrief. I'm here with Tim and Micah, and they have just taught three lessons, lessons 3.5 to 3.7, which takes us all the way from Genesis 24 to, I think, 31, story of Isaac and Rebekah, and then all the way up to when Jacob returns to the land after his sojourn there in Haran, where he gets married as well. So that's a lot of ground to cover. How did you do it?
Don't think either one of us got all the way through all
okay.
of that.
So you had to story over some. This is an unusual starting place. What portions did you skip or story over?
I straight out skipped Jacob's departure from Laban at the end.
Okay.
I'm just going to leave that for after, pick that up and story through that after Christmas. But we covered the rest. I just stuck with one theme in order to pare it down to something I could manageably do. So I left a lot of the details out and focused on the very, very messed up family dynamics.
Okay, so you built your whole covering these three lessons on the basis of exploring broken families.
Yes, and the punchline at the end was this is the Christmas story. This is the family. Like, this is messed up. This is the family where Jesus, this is where we get Jesus from.
Right.
Merry Christmas. Go. See you after break.
Micah, what did you choose to cover and pass over?
Well, pretty much the same thing. I also kind of left out the end of 3.7 where Jacob is leaving. And focused on not as much of the details, but the overarching story, and highlighted a lot of the same things.
Okay. All right. So let's jump in then in 24 and talk about the story of Isaac marrying Rebekah. And we have Abraham sending off the servant to go find a wife for Isaac. And, of course, praying when he arrives in the land of Haran and meeting Rebekah and bringing her back. What's the overall theme you guys carried through on this story? How'd you approach it? Micah. It's like Jeopardy.
Right. Yeah, we talked a lot about the servant's trust in God. And how crazy of, you know, a thing that he's asking for, that, mm-hmm. you know, this woman would be willing to feed all of his camels, and like how he's trusting God, and God like ended up orchestrating all of it, and how, you know, when we trust in God and when we're faithful to do things, like God takes care of us and provides for us.
Nice. Tim, what did you...
I told it fairly straight. This is it's kind of a crazy thing he's asking for. He's 500-ish miles away from, like, he's asking this woman to move 500 miles in a day and age when you walk everywhere. She's never going to see her family again in all likelihood. And the ridiculousness of the request, her lifting a literal ton of water out of the well to water the camels. And then as we go through there, and then, you know, prying her away from her family, getting back home, and then her veiling up so that Isaac doesn't see her, and laid that in because it's going to be important later with Jacob and Leah.
Mm-hmm.
That just put that detail in there that you like, you don't actually see the bride
mm-hmm.
at the wedding, not till afterwards. Emphasize the trust in God and God paving the way, but also just the craziness of Rebecca's faith. This is a big jump. She's going to go marry a 40-year-old single guy she's never met. I mean, he got lots of money though. And apparently he's done real well for himself, but that's like sight unseen on the strength of this total stranger who shows up at the well and the story that he spins. It's a big jump.
Yeah. So I want to back up to the, something you said at the very beginning of that explanation. You said you told it straight. What do you mean? Because sometimes I've heard you say that before in this podcast where you said, I told this one straight, and then others, you don't say that. And apparently you told those crooked. What? Tell me the difference between those.
The difference between those is there a particular set of themes I'm elaborating or highlighting or pulling out, or am I just like doing straight narrative? Here's what happened, then this, then this, then this. I was mostly aiming to get through this one.
Okay.
Because I wanted to get to the birth of Jacob and Esau and then spend some time setting up Jacob's family.
Okay.
So my goal here was, you know, kudos to the servant, kudos to Rebecca. We're moving on and going as quickly as I can with the necessary details, but not really cashing out, like not really.
So this is maybe not quite storying over.
No, but a much leaner
telling of the story.
Yeah.
Maybe noticing some of the things that are, you know, the applications along the way, trusting in God and those kind of things, but not spending too much time thinking through the details of that.
And not taking the time to, there's a thing I often do as I'm telling the story of put yourself in the story. Think about what it's like to be this person.
Right.
And not doing any of that. We're just going through it. And we're going to third person this and admire the admirable people as we go. But I spent my think about what it's like to be this person on Jacob and Leah later.
Right. So you have about, what, 35, 40 minutes of teaching time?
On a good day when the technology is cooperating and everybody's on time. And yes.
So how much time would you say you spent on this Isaac and Rebecca story?
15 minutes, maybe.
Okay. How about you, Micah?
Yeah, it was about 17 minutes, I think.
Okay. Nice. All right. So you guys did about the same thing. Sounds like you both told it straight and got to the story of Jacob and Esau. Well, did you cover anything about the death of Abraham, Isaac, and Abimelech, or did you just jump in there at the end of
24? I straight out skipped Isaac and Abimelech, and I felt bad about it because it's kind of important, but there wasn't time.
Okay, but I'm assuming you guys spent a little time on Jacob and Esau at the end of 25 there, and then Jake, 27, Jacob taking Esau's blessing. Was that the kind of the central portion of this for you, Tim, for you, Micah?
I would say the central portion is on Jacob.
Well, Jacob up in
Jacob in up in Haran.
So this is still Rachel and Leah. Still set up. You're still kind
I'm
of
still
setting
up.
Micah, you do take a similar approach?
Yeah. I mean, we kind of mentioned the birthright and lentil stew story. And then I spent a lot of time on Jacob, like tricking his dad into getting the blessing, and then spent a lot of time on like the Rachel and Leah drama.
Okay. So yeah. How much time would you say you spent on the Jacob and Esau portion then?
Probably 10 minutes, something like that.
7 to 10. Yeah.
Wow. Interesting.
Started with the highlight, like, what God tells Rebecca.
Yeah.
Because this is before all the, you know, we tend to like Jacob and Esau are at each other's throats, but their parents are playing favorites. It's not really, you know, right. No, this starts before any parenting mistakes.
Mm-hmm. You
know, they're at each other's throats in the womb.
Yeah.
And I mean, their granddad is called Father of Nations. It's not exactly a surprise that, you know, you have twins and they're both nations and they don't get along. But that's like, that's part of the challenge that God tosses Isaac and Rebecca. And they didn't like, they didn't do anything wrong to get that.
Yeah.
That's just their life. They make plenty of mistakes based on that.
Yeah.
And Isaac tries to use, I highlight that also gives me the setup for Esau has the birthright. Jacob's trying to get it. God has said that ultimately the older will serve the younger, but Esau despises it and gives it away basically for a bowl of soup. And it's a, I spent just a minute or two talking through the double portion and how that works and the responsibilities that go with that for the oldest son. So when he gives up his birthright, he's not just giving up the inheritance rights.
Yeah.
He's also giving up the responsibility of taking care of the rest of the family.
Yeah.
That goes with it.
Right.
To Jacob. He's shirking his duty as the oldest son. And the fact that the New Testament looks back at this story and universally through the New Testament, nobody's like, Jacob, that shifty son of a gun. Like, that's not how they look back at this.
Huh.
They look back at this in the New Testament as Esau despised his birthright.
Yeah.
Like, he's the bad guy here.
Yeah.
They're both bad guys here. Let's be honest. You know, your brother comes out of the howling wilderness, gotten skunked on a hunting trip and starving. And you're like, well, I could feed you, but I don't think I will. Well, I mean, if you'll sell me your inheritance, I guess that's worth a bowl of soup. I mean,
this was, you know? By the way, I taught our little kids on at Hammersmith on the story of Absalom yesterday. And that was my question to them is, who's the good guy? Who's the bad guy? They had a lot of bad guys. And they came out with David's the good guy.
Kind of.
With an asterisk. But yeah, it seems like that's the way a lot of biblical stories are. Is we like to tell the Sunday school version of, there's the one who was faithful to God and all these other evil people. But, it's usually pretty much more messed up than that. What else did you hit on in this portion, the Jacob and Esau portion, Micah?
We talked about like what does a birthright actually mean, because a lot of the kids were kind of confused about like, oh, he sold him his birthright, but then there's also this blessing thing. And what exactly does Jacob want? So we talked about how that, a birthright, it means that he gets more inheritance, but he also gets more responsibility. And like Esau just doesn't want that. But he does want the blessing. And we talked about like how like getting the blessing was like a really important thing. And like Jacob's words were, or Isaac's words were actually really powerful and he couldn't just take them back. And talked a little bit about theology of blessing, which like, thank you guys. You helped me with that.
Yes.
And it was really great because we talked about like, our words actually matter. And like when we bless people, like that actually is important. And then it was really cute. One of the girls in my class was like, oh, really? Well, in that case, like, God bless all of you.
Nice. Awesome.
I was like, thank you. And on the flip side of that, like, don't curse people either. When someone cuts you off in traffic, like, and you find yourself starting to call them words that you shouldn't, like, don't do that. Like, bless them instead.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of went into that tangent a little bit to give context for why this is important.
Well, yeah, and that's important because it plays out, of course, in the rest of the story, seeing Jacob blessed and at war with Esau, and then the future of Israel, constant battles with Edom and various things like that. The blessings carry blessings and the frustrations built into those blessings carry forward. All right. So we passed over the Abimelech story. And so that brings us up to Jacob fleeing from Esau. We have the dream at Bethel and rise at Haran and the whole story from there on. That seems like a lot to cover, because if I understood right, you guys got, you know, you're 25 minutes in now, and this is the climax of the story. How'd you do it?
I focused on, so Jacob, I focused on the sort of the nobody's a good guy in this, but God has expressed an opinion here.
Mm-hmm.
So what Isaac is doing is trying to use the power of his blessing to countermand what God said when the kids were still in the womb.
Yeah.
He's, you know, thinking that he's speaking to Esau. He says, your mother's sons will bow down to you. He's directly going to war with God, which can't be good, right?
Right.
Meanwhile, Rebecca is pulling all the levers behind the scenes, eavesdropping at the tents. And there's nothing this woman doesn't know. Later, it says Esau said in his heart, I'm going to kill my brother after dad's funeral. And it was told to Rebecca.
Right.
This woman's got a network of spies through the camp. She knows everything. And she's going to have it her way. But it happens that what she wants here is what God said was going to happen.
Yeah.
And so God brings that about. And then he's got to run for his life because Esau's going to kill him. We have another meeting at a well. I teed those up, and one of my kids did like, wait, didn't Jesus meet a... Yes. Yes. Remember this. And then focused on that same messy that Jacob and Laban... There's not really a good guy here, but they're both gouging each other as hard as they can go. But God has committed himself. God is on a side here.
Right.
And it does come out the way he wants it to. But in the process of that, where I spent my put yourself in the story was he works. This guy's, his uncle's got two daughters, and the younger one's real cute. And the older one's kind of not. So he works 7 years and it flies by. And put yourself in their shoes. The thing that happens is, because Jacob is kind of the main character of the story, usually in the Sunday school versions, if anything, they will kind of put you in Jacob's shoes.
Yeah.
So you wake up the next morning, it's not her. Put yourself in Leah's shoes.
Mm.
The day before little sister's wedding, dad sits you down and is like, okay, so here's what nobody wants to marry you. So here's what we're going to do. She's burka'd up. She goes into her wedding as her sister, goes to her wedding night as her sister. Imagine being Leah waiting for the sun to come up.
Oh yeah.
That's horrible. And Jacob does not handle this well, but in his defense, like, who would? But Laban did that right to her, and she didn't really have a lot of choice in it. So then Jacob goes to Laban, what the heck, man? And Laban's like, hey, you know, we have a custom. Sorry, it's just how it had to be. Work for me for another 7 years, you can have Rachel too. And Jacob's like, ah, you're paying up front this time. So he does work the other 7 years, but he gets her first, which means Leah has like all of a day before her pretty little sister moves into the household. And she's been not the pretty one her whole life, and her one shot at getting out of that was getting married. And now her sister is also married to the same man who doesn't want her, never did, didn't ask for her, but here she is.
Right.
It's awful. And then the only thing she has going for her is she's fertile. But then Rachel's like, so stop me if this sounds familiar. I got this servant. They're like, really? They didn't learn their lesson? My kids are like, didn't that go badly last time? Yes. Yes, it did. Just wait. It was great. I said, we got to the Leah story landing. This is bad. And then I said, and one of my guys was like, that's so messed up. I'm like, wait, it gets worse. How? Like, oh, buddy, we got like 7 minutes left. It gets so much worse.
Nice.
So we have all of the problems of polygamy. We've got Jacob being split between two wives and two concubines. We've got children by four women under the same roof. Is bad. And that's kind of where we left it. This is the Christmas story. This is the, as they're like, this is just so, and they're all cousins. This is so messed up. You're like, yes. And this is the family that we get Jesus from.
Nice. Micah, what did you do with this portion?
I hit on similar points. We talked about the well thing, and I was like, hey, anyone else meet anyone at a well in the Bible? And they kind of pointed to different examples. We talked about how that's kind of a theme and it's important. We also talked a little bit about how, going back a little bit, like how Rebecca was barren, and that's a theme, and kind of pointing to the Christmas story a little bit. And then, yeah, we talked about Jacob working for Laban and, you know, how they're both in different ways screwing each other over. And we talked about how, from Leah's perspective, just how much that must have sucked, being forced to marry a guy that wants to marry your sister, and then she has to deal with that. And then we talked about how, like, in that time, like, part of your value as a woman was, like, having kids. And so, like, Leah does have kids, and that's kind of a redemption, but it doesn't end there, because then they have the whole servant thing. And one of my students was like, this guy slept with four different women. Like, that's terrible. And I thought that was funny. And it's like, yes, that is kind of part of the point. Like, it's messed up. And yet God, like, redeems that.
It's a Jerry. This is a Jerry Springer episode.
Right.
Yeah. And then we just kind of brought it back to, like, but this isn't actually that unlike real life. Like, real life is kind of messed up. And, like, all of us have messy families and family drama. And yet, like, look how God redeems this. Mm-hmm. And this is, like what Tim said, this is where Jesus comes from. This is his family. So that's where I left it off.
Nice. All right. So that brings us to the end of these lessons. And we left the kids with, is this your last, or do you have another week of class, or is this?
No, they're on break. So when we come back from break, I'm going to have to cover the flight from Haran.
Okay.
In order to bring us into unit 4.
Okay.
But that'll tee it up nicely, the continued messy family dynamics.
Yeah.
And we're going to add, you know, some genocide, a rape and genocide. And that's just a day in the life of Jacob's family.
Yep. Yep. Good. More stuff that God is not ashamed to have in the line of the king. All right, so we'll pick up there next time on the Bible Class Debrief. See you later.